And thank you. All right. Okay. Hi. Good morning, everybody. This is a story you may have heard before, and maybe you haven't. But there's a man. It's a Sunday morning, and people are on the subway out of the East Coast, and it's a relaxing morning. People are reading the papers. Some people are dozing. Some people are just kind of looking out the window. And they come to the next stop, and the doors open, and in comes a man, and he has several children with him, and they're wild. They're rambunctious. And they're kind of going a little crazy, and the man gets on, and he just kind of sits down and just kind of checks out and zones out, you know. And people around are getting agitated, you know. The kids are running around, and they're grabbing some people's papers, you know, and you've had kids. If you've had kids, you know what I mean. If you haven't had kids, you still know what I mean. Right? And people are kind of like, people that are parents have that little extra, like, you know, God bless them, help them out, right? But it goes on so long that pretty soon everybody's starting to get a little irritated and agitated, you know. Even the parents are like, come on, like, can't you do something about your kid here? Your kids, right? And so finally, one person gets up and they go and talk and say, sir, your kids, they're very distracting. Can you please do something to help out? We just want to have a quiet ride here, everybody. Right? What do you do? What would you do if that was you? Do you say that? Do you get up and move as far down the cab as you can? Do you just ignore it and be like, I don't know, whatever. Crazy stuff happens. I'm moving on. What do you do? Well, go ahead and open up your Bibles. If you got them, please, or on wherever you got a Bible, to Matthew 12. Matthew 12, and we're going to start in verse 1. Do we have the title slide up there? Yes, okay. I just, anybody remember Michael Flatley and the Lord of the Dance, right? He's like Irish dancer or whatnot. That's all I could think of when I got to this, right, you know? Lord of the Sabbath, right? You know, and who is the Lord of the Sabbath? I don't know. We're gonna find out. But anyway, so there you go. So anyway, we're in Matthew 1. Let's just go ahead and start by reading through this a bit. At that time, Jesus went through the grain fields on the Sabbath. His disciples were hungry, and they began to pluck grains, heads of grain to eat. But when the Pharisees saw it, they said to him, "Look, your disciples are doing what is not lawful on the Sabbath." He said to them, "Have you not read what David did when he was hungry, and those who were with him, how he entered the house of God and ate the bread of the presence, which is not lawful for him to eat, nor for those who were with him, but only for the priests? Or have you not read in the law how on the Sabbath the priests in the temple profane the Sabbath and are guiltless? I tell you, something greater than the temple is here. And if you had known what this means, I desire mercy and not sacrifice, you would not have condemned the guiltless." All right. And then we'll go on from there, but let's start with this first portion here. So, in the Jewish world, the Sabbath is a big deal. You know, this isn't like a minor issue. In fact, there's a popular saying these days that says, it's not so much that the Jewish people have kept the Sabbath, but the Sabbath has kept the Jewish people, right? And this weekly act, this weekly remembrance, right, is something that has set them apart historically from all the other nations. To take one day out of every seven to just do nothing, right? To not work, to cease from your labors, and to gather together to worship God, right? But to lay down everything you're doing, right? So in Judaism, a day goes from evening to evening, okay? So in Judaism, the Sabbath starts on Friday night and it ends on Saturday night. It's a 25-hour period. They actually do an extra hour just to buffer on either side. So it's a 25-hour period. And when you get to Sabbath, your work is done. You know, you may be in the middle of doing dishes, but your work is done. You may be in the middle of doing your laundry, but work is done. You have to wait 25 hours, okay? And the thing is, you know, it's a big deal because God made it a big deal, right? So if you read through Torah, if you read through the first five books, you know, God, when he gives Israel the Sabbath, it's a sign covenant. It's a sign covenant between Israel and God, Okay? And that the creator of the world, who initiated Sabbath in the first week of creation, 6 days he created, and then he took one day, and he blessed that day, and he made it holy, and he called it Sabbath. And Sabbath is from the Hebrew root that means to cease, to stop from working. Okay? Was God tired? Ooh, ugh. Those men, man, they really wore me out. You know, the animals were easy and the birds, but whew, Adam and then Eve, whoo, I am tired. Oh, no, no. God wasn't tired, so why does God rest? If you go back and think on that, I'm not answering that. I'm giving you a question, right? But he sets a pattern. So later down the years, when God chooses Abraham and his descendants, and when he brings the Israelites out of Egypt and he brings them to the Mount of Sinai and he gives them his laws, one of the big Ten Commandments, right, is to remember the Sabbath day, keep it holy. And he says to not do any work on this day, okay? So I suggest to you, first of all, you know, when the Pharisees are bringing up questions about the Sabbath, you know, it's not like they're just trying to be jerks to him, but they're having real questions. Because look, if God told us, look, you could die for this. Did you know that? People did die for this. There's a story in Torah about a man who went out and started gathering sticks on the Sabbath. And it didn't end well for him, right? God ends up calling him out. They find out who he is, and he actually died for that, right? So there's, I would take that seriously. You're like, whoa, okay, all right. So what do you mean, God? Cease my work. Let's just pause for a minute, and I want to figure out what you mean by this, because I don't want to end up like stick gatherer over here, right? So there's things that God said not to do, like gather sticks, gather things, light fires. Okay, you're not supposed to do that. And there's some certain prohibitions that God specifically mentions, but then there's a lot that they don't, right? So what do? You're in the wilderness, you know, you're the Israelites, and you're Moses, and you're Aaron, and you're the elders, and you're like, what is work? We just want to try to better understand this commandment, right, so we don't, like, end up like stick man over here. You know, we had branch man earlier, okay? Branch man, good. Stick man, not so good, okay? And so they came up with basically a derivation because the Hebrew word is melacha. And melacha, right, means creating things. So it's more than just in English. We think of work. So they're like, okay, well, great. Then I'm not going to go into the office today. I'm not going to, right, whatever the thing is that you do for your job. Okay? But the word in Hebrew is melacha, which means, like, it's creative. So it's more than that. So there's things like making food would fall under melacha. If you're taking different items and you're blending them and you're making something different, right, you're creating something that wasn't. And then if it involves a fire, where did that fire come from? You can't light a fire to get it going. And so you can start to see why a system develops over time where they're trying to say, like, so what is work? And so basically, they kind of came down, and where it stands now is basically there's 39 categories. And where do they derive these 39 categories? Well, imagine you're in the wilderness. Okay, it's you and God and a lot of sand, your people and your animals, right? What kind of work can we do here? And they said, well, probably things that involve creating the tabernacle. That's the only really work we have to do, right? So things like making yarn and threading and gathering and sewing and dyeing and cutting and stitching together and, right? Burning things up and all these categories. So they come up with 39 categories of what would constitute work. And then under that, they're working to try to hilarious, right? They're working to try to figure out, right, what kind of things might be permissible and not permissible on the Sabbath. I would put forward to you that this is an act of devotion and love, right? It's easy to sit back and be like, dang, they're all dang legalistic about it. But first of all, you don't want to die. If this is a very serious thing to God. And second of all, if you do love God, you're like, I really want to understand what your law means. How do I please you, right? What are you looking for from us here? And how can we work within this framework here? All right, so this is a big deal, right? We're going to come into some Sabbath questions here. And basically the question is, who is this person and what do they think they're doing on the Sabbath, right? Is this permissible or not? Because it looks like they're breaking the Sabbath, which could be punishable by death, depending on what infraction they've brought, right? And so the charge comes up against the disciples. Of course, they don't go to the disciples. They go to Jesus because he's their rabbi, right? And so he's responsible for their actions. And they say, hey, Jesus, your disciples over here, They're doing what's not lawful on the Sabbath. Look, they're plucking heads of grain. Now, how is that not lawful? Well, right, that would be you're gathering. You're plucking something, right? You're out in a field, and you're taking something that wasn't, and you're picking it, so you're creating a change. They're rubbing it in their hands to get the wheat and the chaff separated, right? And then they're eating it, okay? So it's like, hey, what's the problem? Well, the problem is the picking, perhaps, and the problem is the separation, right? You're taking these things that were one and separating. So you're doing melacha, right? You're creating something that wasn't so that you can eat it. And so here we start, okay? So here's the deal. Did his disciples do anything wrong? Did they break the Sabbath? This is the question. I really put you on the spot. I'd ask somebody. He's like, I'm not looking at you, man. I'm a teacher, though, and I'm kind of a mean one. And we have a rule in my class, volunteer or voluntold, right? So it's always better to be on the volunteer, because when voluntold comes, there's no backing out of that one. I'm just teasing you. Okay, all right. Okay, right, so here's the deal. So let me share with you a little bit of my hermeneutic. I want you to understand where I'm coming from when I read the scriptures, okay? The way that I filter and I run through scriptures here. Okay. And so part of my hermeneutic is that I believe that Jesus did not come to abolish the law, okay, for Jewish people. In fact, he says so himself in Matthew 5:17. He says, do not think that I came to abolish the law. Right? He says, not even one jot, not even one tittle. It's just like a little mark. It's like what separates the difference between like an F from a little L. I don't know. Little marks, right? Okay? So first of all, if we're reading through this and it's like, oh, you know, Jesus is just going to like, whatever. He's done with that now, right? It's a new era. It's a new thing. Well, I'm taking Jesus at his word that he's like, don't even think that that's what I've come to do. Which is interesting because we must be tempted to think that way, right? Okay, so that's my first hermeneutic. That Jesus, to Jewish people, is saying, I didn't come to do away with the law. Don't get that thing. We're doing something else here, okay? And the second hermeneutic that I run through is that the Pharisees are not monsters. They're not the bad guys. They're his beloved opponents. Let's put it that way. Okay? And I know this may be very new for you. You may be like, it's time to go now. Can we catch another service on the way here? Who's still starting? Okay? Okay, but I present to you that the Pharisees are not the bad guys in the story. They're his beloved opponents. And yes, he argues, and he has harsh words, and he tumbles. But let me ask you, in your family, have you ever argued with somebody in your family? I see some eyes, right? You don't have to raise your hand. Have you ever said something hurtful to your husband, to your wife, to your children? And do you hate them? Are they the bad guys? Don't answer that. Probably don't answer that. Because we can fall into that sometimes. If only this kid you gave me had, oh, my wife, my dad, my mom, my sister, okay? Do you hate them? I don't know, maybe sometimes you do, if you're really honest. You're like, I'm so mad right now. But as a whole, we tend to argue most with people that we actually care about, right? The reason that I'm so irked is because I like you, and I want you to like me, and I want to have harmony, and I'm so frustrated that this thing is between us, and I don't know how you can believe that right now, right? And vice versa. Okay, look, if somebody's out in the street and they're doing something goofy, it's like, wow, that looks really goofy. Moving on, right? If somebody's on the radio saying something silly, I'm like, that is silly. Change the channel, right? I'm not like, ooh, generally. You can, depending on what it is. Okay, so here's my hermeneutic. Okay, the Pharisees are actually, he likes them a lot, so much that he's actually hanging out with them, and they're hanging out with him, and he's actually engaging them in debates because he actually cares about them and actually is like, you're close, but let's have a discussion here. Okay? Now, that would change things. Could that not change things, right? Because look, he's not having these hardcore debates with the Sadducees. He does have harsh words for the Sadducees. He goes into the temple. They're the ones who have charge of the temple, right? He flips over everything. He rebukes some of them. He leaves, right? I don't see long discourses with him arguing with the Sadducees, right? Or the Essenes, the community out by the Dead Sea area. I never see him arguing with them, having long discourses, right? I don't see him going with the Herodians and being like, you're so wrong, let's just duke it out, right? And all these other people, but he really does, he's fighting with the Pharisees, but I want to say that I think because he actually likes them for the most part. And it, you know, what's really interesting is Christianity actually has the largest components of Pharisaism in it, right? Because who believed in angels and demons? The Pharisees, not the Sadducees. They didn't believe in that, right? Who believed in the law and the prophets having validity? It was the Pharisees. The Sadducees only believed in Torah. They're just like, only Torah, everything else, nah, right? Who believed in the resurrection of the dead? The Pharisees, hardcore did, right? And who believed in the idea of a coming Messiah? The Pharisees had this, right? And there were other elements, but like these ideas, and so when Paul, the apostle, becomes a believer, he is a Pharisee bringing all that in, and he's like, yeah, that stuff's not wrong. Like this is, yeah, absolutely, right? There's angels, there's demons, there's resurrection, there's Messiah. The law and the prophets are absolutely valid. That's how we base our lives. That's how we base knowledge and truth. Okay, so if we filter that through that a little bit here, let's read through this. So Jesus, his disciples are being accused of breaking the Sabbath. And so you could read this, you know, here could be an easy way to read it. It's like, okay, the Pharisees, I'm just going to give you like more of like an easy typical reading that we might tend to think, that I used to think. Okay, the Pharisees are bad dudes. They're just all worked up about stuff that doesn't even matter, right? And so they just come to Jesus, right? And they're just picking at him, and they're asking about the Sabbath, right? And Jesus is like, look, guys, come on. This is silly. I'm the Lord of the Sabbath, right? And we're doing away with this thing. This thing's going away. It doesn't matter, right? What really just matters is that you just be nice to people, okay? Got it? And there you go, right? But that doesn't work. That doesn't work for me. And I think if we work through the text a bit, I want to give you some other ways to view this of what I think Jesus is doing. What I think he's doing is he's arguing with the Pharisees. He's doing it in kind of a legal discourse, right? It's like, imagine like this. My brother's having a heart attack. And I get him in the car, and we peel out. And I'm burning rubber, right? And I'm like freaked out, and I'm driving like 80 miles an hour, and I blow through a red light. I don't know, like, I can't even stop. I just, and the policeman pulls me over. Ooh. Sir, what are you doing? My brother is having a heart attack right now. I need to get him in the hospital. What does the police officer say? I don't care about that. You were speeding, sir, and you went through a red light. I'm going to need you to take your license here and need you to wait for a tow truck to come, and I'm going to have to take you to jail. Is that what happens? In what world would that happen? I don't want to be in that world, right? I've never had this happen, but as I understand the law and as I understand it, right, the policemen are like, oh my goodness, sir, let me escort you. Like, let's get you to the hospital quickly, as safely as possible, but I understand. Let's go, right? Did you break the law? Yes, you did. You sped. You ran through a red light. But why did you break the law? To save a life, right? What's the purpose of a law? To bring life, right? Laws are meant to give you life. Good laws should be. Help you flourish and help society work together. Did you break a law? Yeah, you did. Are you going to be punished? Most likely not. Maybe if you ran into somebody, that could be, I don't know what would happen there. Right, but we understand that there's time and places for laws to be broken, and it makes sense, especially if the purpose of the law is to save a life, to make civilization flourish better. Okay. So if you read through here, Jesus never says his disciples didn't break the law exactly, per se. He doesn't say that. He's not being like, hey guys, come on, they didn't break the law, just chill out. Right? So what he is instead, he's going to kind of take us through a bit of a legal argument, and he's going to use the law and the prophets to kind of lead us through it, help the Pharisees think about it, okay? Because these are questions. He's entering into questions and dialogues. When Jesus comes on the scene in Second Temple Judaism, it is not like codified. Like now it's pretty codified throughout centuries and centuries of advancement. But at the time of Jesus, there were a lot of questions like, how does this work, right? What is our obligation to the Sabbath? What is our obligation to the temple that doesn't even exist right now, right? And how does this work? And there were all kinds of questions. So Jesus comes on the scene at a time when there are a lot of questions. You've got two major rabbis just right at the beginning of Jesus, Rabbi Hillel and Rabbi Shammai, okay? And these are like two, if you've ever been to college, you ever seen the Hillel house? Yeah, right? You've never seen a Shammai house. You won't ever see that, right? Doesn't exist. Why? Because Rabbi Hillel was known for making legislations that were more lenient. And Rabbi Shammai was known for being hardcore letter of the law. In fact, there's a story in the Talmud that says that a certain man that wanted to be a proselyte came to Rabbi Shammai, who was a builder. And he came to him, and he has his level in his hand. And the man says, "Hey, I'm interested in Judaism. Teach me the whole Torah while I stand on one leg." And Rabbi Shammai takes his builder's cubit, and he whacks the man, and he says, "Get out of here." So then this man, he goes over to Rabbi Shammai, or Hillel. He goes to Hillel. He says, "Hey, I'm interested in Judaism. Teach me the whole Torah while I stand on one leg." And Hillel says, "What is hateful to you, don't do to others. All the rest is commentary. Go and learn." Sound familiar? What is hateful to you, don't do to others. The rest is commentary. Now go and learn. He wasn't saying that the rest of the Torah didn't matter. He'd be saying, this is the heart of it, and if you can get this, apply it to the rest, and you'll be fine. Okay, so I think Jesus, here's what he is. He's working through this argument, and I think it looks something like this. Can you pull up the slide with the triangle with the bread and the wine on the bottom? That would be great. Oh, okay, there we go. So we have the issue of the Sabbath, right? What is the relation of Sabbath? Because here's the question. We have to look at hierarchies here, like what's most important? And this is the question that Jesus gets a lot, right? Rabbi, what's the greatest commandment? People are interested. They're like, I want to know what the greatest is, because if I know what the greatest is, I'm just going to walk up here and keep my thighs busy. If I know what the greatest one is, okay, then I feel like I can kind of parse the rest out, okay? Hey there, everybody there on live stream. Okay, but I want to know what the greatest one is. Is it like, you know, not removing a baby chick from the nest while the mom's there? Is that the greatest one, right? What is it? There's 613 counted commandments that they've come up with. Which one's the greatest? Because it's a lot, you know? What do I need to focus on? Okay, so is it Sabbath? Because this seems to be a big one. You can die for, like, breaking it, so maybe it's Sabbath. So Jesus starts off with a little story. He says, look, your disciples are not doing, they're doing what's not lawful on the Sabbath. He said to them, have you not read what David did when he was hungry and those who were with him? How he entered the house of God and ate the bread of the presence, which is not lawful for him to eat, nor for those who are with him, but only for the priests. Okay, so you're like, oh, this is kind of a weird tack. Where are we going with this? And Jesus said, so there's a story in 1 Samuel about David. And David was on the run from Saul. And he was famished. He was hungry. And he arrives at the house of God. And the priest comes out and says, how can I help you, right? And he says, I'm hungry. Me and my men are hungry. We need food. Do you have bread? And they said, we don't have any bread. All we have is the bread of the presence. So in Torah, it talks about the Israelites were to take and bake bread every week. And on the Sabbath, they would change out the bread, and they would put new bread of the presence, and they would take out the old bread. It was 12 loaves, one for each tribe of Israel. Okay, and then they would have the new bread. And it was always in the temple. That was one of the things that was inside. Okay, the bread of the presence, the menorah lampstand, the altar of incense, and behind that is the Holy of Holies, okay? So if you enter in there, that's what you see. You see bread, you see light, you see smoky incense area, okay? But the problem is only priests can eat that. And is Jesus a priest? No, he is not. No, priests come from the tribe of Levi. Aha, but Jesus is of the stock of David. He's a Judite. Aha. Let's not confuse Melchizedekian priesthood with Levitical priesthood. But David, being the great grandpa, right, of Jesus, he's a Judite. So he's not supposed to eat that bread. It's only supposed to be for the Levites. So this is wrong. But the priest says, hey, are you guys clean? You know, have you kept yourself from women? Are you ritually pure? And he says, yep, I am. We're on the run. We're all good. And so the priest says, okay, you can eat the bread. This is a violation, though, of Torah. It wasn't lawful for them to eat that. Okay, so here's the first precedent, then. So what is Jesus saying? Why is he telling this story? Jesus is setting the precedent that human need is greater than the ceremonial law of the temple. Okay? The ceremonial law of the temple is that the bread of the presence is only for the priests. And Jesus says, I understand, but look, David and his men, they ate the bread because they had need, right? And that human need trumped that law, and they actually were okay to do it. It was wrong, but they're going to live. I mean, they needed to live, right? Life trumps ceremonial law, right? Just like how I'm going to speed and run the red light because my brother's having a heart attack. Okay, so here's the first level. So what he's saying is, look, the temple, right? The temple is a big deal, right? But what's a bigger deal? Human need, okay? Saving a life, okay? So we see that human need is greater than the temple. And then he says, or have you not read in the law how on the Sabbath the priests in the temple profane the Sabbath and are guiltless? Okay? So now we see, and the temple breaks the Sabbath. Every Sabbath, those priests are breaking the Sabbath. Because what are they doing? God told them, offer double sacrifices on the Sabbath, okay? If you're going to offer a sacrifice, you got to cut, and you got to rip, and you got to splash, right? And you got to burn, right? And they're putting bread out, so they're carrying bread. They're making new bread. They're carrying it. They're putting it out here, okay? Other things that could happen on the Sabbath would be like circumcision. In the law, you have to do it on the eighth day. What if that eighth day falls on the Sabbath? You do it, because that trumps the Sabbath laws, okay? So he's setting up the next level. Can we go back to that little picture there? Okay. That we see that the temple is greater than the Sabbath because they break the Sabbath laws every Sabbath in the temple, but they're guiltless. Are they breaking the laws? They are. They are. They're breaking the laws, but it's okay, right? Because God said to do it. Okay, and then if we look at the very top, then what's greater than the temple? Human need, right? Because we just learned that from David. So if the temple is greater than the Sabbath, because every Sabbath they're desecrating it, but they're okay, they're guiltless because God says you need to do this. And human need, David and his men, was greater than the temple. They took something from the temple that they weren't supposed to have. Then what's greater than the Sabbath? What's at the very top of the food pyramid? Human need. Human need. Right? And what were his men doing? They had needs. They were hungry and they were in the fields. Did they break the Sabbath? They did. They did. I don't see him arguing they didn't. But he's like, but they're guiltless, okay? Because there was human need, there was hunger. Now, in Judaism, there's a term called pikuach nefesh, which means to save a life, right? And even in modern Judaism, they understand that if you're a doctor, you're a Jewish doctor, you can work on Shabbat. If you're a Jewish person and you need medical help, you can go to the doctor, you can have surgery, you can, whatever you need if it's going to save your life. Because you can't, dead men keep no commandments, right? Or as David said, no one praises you from the grave, right? Dead people tell no secrets. Pirates of the Caribbean. Right, and so, so we got to stay alive, right? If a law would bring death, then that's antithetical to the point of the law. Forget the law for the moment, but don't forget the law forever. I can't just go speeding around whenever I want because I'm like, my brother had a heart attack last week. And they're like, oh, okay, and now? Well, he's at the hospital, he's fine, but I just love driving at 90 miles an hour, you know? And they're like, oh, no, okay, that's, now pull over, sir. I'm going to need your license for that, okay? So there are exigencies. There are moments where we can see, even in our natural law, that laws can be broken, but you can be guiltless. And by the way, if you go to court and a judge pronounces you and says that you are not guilty, does that mean that you didn't do anything? Not necessarily. It just means you're not guilty. I may have done the whole thing, but they couldn't pin it on me. So getting a not guilty doesn't mean that I'm innocent. Do you see that? Right? I could go into court and run my little case, and I got my lawyers, and I'm like, and he gets me off the hook, and they say, not guilty. Doesn't mean I didn't do it. It just means that they didn't pin it on me. They couldn't get me. All right, moving on. So, then you might write a book, If I Did It, you know, and you're like, oh gosh, are you kidding me? This came up earlier with my students this week. I'm like, even my students who are like 15, 16 know about the O.J. Simpson trial and all that, you know, and they're like, what was that all about? You know, that's crazy. And I'm like, yeah, it was kind of crazy. Why would you write a book? Whatever. Moving on. So Jesus is going to continue on. He says, look, I tell you something greater than the temple is here. And if you'd known what this means, I desire mercy and not sacrifice, you would not have condemned the guiltless. He didn't say innocent, the guiltless. For the Son of Man is Lord of the Sabbath. Okay, so I'm going to give you two ways of reading this because I'm going to be honest with you. It's not fully settled, right, on what this means. There's two ways to look at that. So I'm going to give you two different ways to look at it, and I'm going to let, you know, you can wrestle with it too. All right, but I'm feeling pretty convinced of one of the two, as one ought to, I guess, that they're going to believe something. Best to be convinced of it. Okay, so let's go through the first one, all right? The first one is this. I tell you that something greater than the temple is here, and if you'd know what this means, to desire mercy and not sacrifice, you would not have condemned the guiltless, for the Son of Man is Lord of the Sabbath. And so the first interpretation goes like this. Something greater than the temple is here, a.k.a. me. I'm the Messiah. I'm God in the flesh, right? So if the temple is greater than the Sabbath, and human need is greater than the temple, right? Who's the greatest of them all? You know, mirror, mirror on the wall, right? It's you, Jesus. Okay, so that's one way of looking at it, that Jesus is saying something greater than the temple is here. Tis I, right? And what would that mean? Well, how do you argue with God? Like, oh, okay. So then God says, and they're guiltless, because I'm God. I tell you that, right? I have the prerogative to say that. For the Son of Man is the Lord of the Sabbath. And Son of Man is a term that's used for Jesus often. He calls himself the Son of Man, which comes from the book of Daniel, right? I saw one like a son of man that came before God, right? And so there's this whole idea of the Son of Man, and Jesus actually uses that term far more in the Gospels than ever talking about him being Messiah, okay? Now, what would be the outworking of that then? Well, the outworking is that, look, Jesus is greater than the temple. He's God in the flesh. He's Messiah. He's the Lord of the Sabbath, so he has the right to say these people are guiltless. That's one way to look at it. However, in my viewpoint, that doesn't make a lot of sense. Why do we just run through the whole argument of David and his men and the Sabbath and the priests, right? We don't even need to go there because at the end, he's just saying, look, I'm God, right? I'm greater than the temple. I'm greater than all that. And I'm the Lord of the Sabbath. And so I'm changing this, right? There's a new sheriff in town, right? Things are going to change around here. Okay, that's one way of looking at it. But there's another way of looking at it that, personally, I think lines up more for the long haul, okay? And so let's run through it this way. Instead, I tell you that something greater than the temple is here, okay, could be referring to mercy, right? Mercy. In Hebrew, the word is chesed, which is a very hard word to define and pin down, right? So we get all sorts of translationals for that because it's this idea that's very rich. What is chesed? It's mercy. It's loving kindness. It's faithfulness. It's covenant faithfulness. We like have to add words together to try to come up with this idea of that. Another thing about chesed is it's love beyond its borders. Love beyond its borders. Like, for example, in the Torah, it says if a man marries his sister, this is chesed, right? And you're like, what? That's weird. Wait, what? How is that? Yeah. I'm not promoting that. But chesed, in that case, it actually says it's not a good thing if you read through it. But it's love beyond its borders. Like, that's actually beyond, right? That's actually used that way in the Bible, right? And then other ways it's used, right, is to talk about love that goes beyond its borders. For example, God so loved the world, right, that he gave his only begotten son. What kind of crazy love is that? That doesn't even make any sense. How are you going to give your only son for this messed up, jacked up humanity, right? It's chesed, it's mercy, it's grace, it's covenant faithfulness, it's, right? And I propose to you that Jesus is saying, look, because here's the thing, something that bothers me, right? I'm a linguist to a degree, right? I teach French and I like language and I look at words. And it's interesting, he says something greater. He doesn't say someone greater, right? And if you know any Greek, it's in the neuter form, right? It's not masculine, it's not feminine, it's in the neuter form, which would translate to like an it. It, something, it is greater than the temple, okay? So for me, I'm like, well, that's interesting, right? It's like, okay, so I would propose to you, how I'm reading this, is that Jesus says, yes, something greater than the temple is here. And you know what that is? It's mercy. In fact, he's going to go on to tell us then, right? He makes a quote from Hosea 6:6. He says, "And if you had known what this means, I desire mercy and not sacrifice, you would not have condemned the guiltless. Okay? He tells us right here, I propose to you, okay? Do with it as you will, wrestle through it. But I think he's calling us to this higher level of mercy, of chesed, of faithfulness, of love. The words we have to put in there, right? Which I think easily like lines up all the New Testament. I mean, I think of anything from where it's like Jesus says, hey, look, if someone comes up to you and they slap you on the other cheek, you know, turn the other cheek to them. If someone compels you to go 1 mile, go 2 miles. That's love beyond borders. Paul says that, look, if I have the gift of tongues and I can do miracles and all that, but I don't have love, it's like a gong, right? It doesn't matter. I could do all the things. I could do all the things, but if I don't have love, it's just noise, okay? I think there's a good argument to be made for this. Okay, and then, finishing up then, he says, for the Son of Man is Lord of the Sabbath. And yes, Jesus does often use this title, Son of Man, to refer to himself, kind of in his exalted messianic state. But also, it can just generically mean people, right? I'm a son of man, you're a son of man, we all are, right? And in fact, if we just pop over real quick to Mark chapter 2, verse 27, where it gives a parallel account here in the book of Mark 2:27. Mark 2:27. All right. It's a similar story. It's a little bit shorter, but starting in verse 26, okay, David entered the house of God in the times of Abiathar, the high priest. He ate the bread of presence, which is not lawful for any but the priest to eat, and also gave it to those who were with him. And he said to them, the Sabbath was made for man, not man for the Sabbath. So the Son of Man is Lord even of the Sabbath. So I would propose to you that another way to look at this is Jesus is saying, look, humanity, the Sabbath, was made for you, not you for the Sabbath. So if we're looking at a ranking order again, okay, who bows to whom? I think I used my English correct there. Did I use that correctly, John? I don't know. You're an English guy. Okay. Who bows to whom? I think I said it rightly. Anna? I feel like you're Englishy. Yeah. Who bows to whom? Is that right?
Yeah.
Who bows to whom? Okay. Right? Thank you. That's great. I'll take your class. But if there's a question about Sabbath observance versus human needs, right, saving a life, but Jesus even seems to go a little further. He seems a little more radical than just saving a life, because his disciples probably weren't going to die if they didn't eat grain that day. Probably not. But I don't know, maybe. No, I doubt it, though, right? But even then, Jesus is like, but they're hungry. They're hungry, Mama. They need food, right? That one's for you, Marita. They're hungry, right? And he's like, yeah, like they did. They picked grain. Yep, you're right. And they did, yada, yada. But like human needs, right? They're hungry. And they just, it's Sabbath. But come on. We should go hungry on the Sabbath. How lame is that? And by the way, what is the Sabbath a picture of anyway? What's the Sabbath a picture of? God created for 6 days, and he rested one day, and did what, you know? He, like, played Wordle on his phone. He went to the future and played Wordle, you know? Right? God enjoyed his creation, right? He was with his creation. Presumably, he's hanging out with Adam and Eve in the garden, you know? He's looking around, probably. He's probably talking to them, being with them, them with him, right? You can imagine he's enjoying the garden. He might go over and smell a pear tree and be like, why did I do that? That did not smell so good. You ever smell, some of those pear trees are really bad smelling, you know? I've heard it's like one, like the female or the male. One of the two smells bad and one of them smells good. Anybody know what I'm talking about? Or am I just alone up here? Glenn knows what I'm talking about. I'm just gonna, yeah. Right? Okay, so what's the point of the Sabbath? Well, the Sabbath is a time to be with God and man and God be together. It's time to worship, it's time to rest, it's time to relax. And also, it's also a prophetic picture of the coming age to come, the messianic age, okay? And what kind of things don't exist in the messianic age? Need, hunger. God says everyone's going to have what they need, okay? Hunger's not going to exist. Need's not going to exist, Okay? You know what else isn't going to exist? Satan and his enemies. They're going to be chained up and put into the bottomless pit, right? So people can actually have a breath of life without the constant press of evil forces from above and around us, right? What else is going to be in the Sabbath, right? Jesus is going to be there. Good one. So let's hang out with Jesus there. You know what I'm saying? People that you love, the resurrection of the dead. So all the people that followed Christ being resurrected. So families will be restored. Relationships will be restored. A beautiful thing, right? And so even in this, it's like, so on the Sabbath day, isn't this a perfect day to have something in your tummy to eat? And in fact, Jesus is going to say something else. It's a perfect day to not suffer. And so let's read the next part. Jesus went on from there, and he entered their synagogue, and a man was there with a withered hand. And they asked him, is it lawful to heal on the Sabbath? Okay, again, here's a question, right? And I think sometimes they're asking, honestly, sometimes they're trying to catch him, and I think they usually tell you, they conspired against him. But I think sometimes it's a real question. They're like, is it lawful to heal on the Sabbath, Jesus? Like, really, because I don't know, our rabbis are, I'm getting different opinions here, and the Bible doesn't tell us, right? It says you're not supposed to do work, but I don't know. If you say be healed, and someone gets healed, is that work, right? Well, melacha is creation, right? So yeah, that's work. It's a form of work. I didn't touch somebody, but I created something. Okay, so they asked him the question so they might accuse him, okay? So this is bad motives, though. This isn't good. And he said to them, which one of you who has a sheep and it falls into a pit on the Sabbath will not take hold of it and lift it out? Of how much more value is the man than a sheep? So is it lawful to do good on the Sabbath? So it is lawful to do good on the Sabbath. Then he said to the man, stretch out your hand. And the man stretched it out, and it was restored, healthy like the other. But the Pharisees went out and conspired against him on how to destroy him. Okay, so this is not good, right? This is one of those things where you're like, oh yeah, okay, beloved opponents, it's not good, right? They want to destroy him. Jesus still loves them. I think he's actually asking this question. He wants to have a dialogue, but they just shut down. Pfft. Is it okay to heal on the Sabbath? And he's like, well, let's talk about it. And they're just like, no. Mm-mm. We ain't got to talk about this because we're going to lose probably, right? I don't know what to tell you, but I ain't opening my mouth. But he says, look, he brings up another example. He's like, look, you, Daryl, you keep sheep. One of your sheep got loose, and it's the Sabbath, and he went and fell in a pit. Woo! Bah! Right? Do you leave him there all Sabbath, or do you get him out? Daryl's a compassionate man. I'm trusting he's going to get him out. But that's not lawful on the Sabbath. You're doing work. You're picking up. You're lifting. You're, right? According to the Sabbath laws that he's working in. And he's like, yeah, that's not actually right, but you're not just out there just doing your daily job. You're doing it to save a life. Your sheep could die in there, right? Your sheep could have issues, whatever it is in there, you know, whether it be abandonment issues or, you know, they die. And so he says, look, the life of a sheep, you would go out there and save your sheep, right? How much more value is a human being? So why on Sabbath would we not also alleviate human suffering and pain and heal people, right? Even if it's breaking the Sabbath, because we're alleviating pain, we're bringing mercy, we're bringing restoration, and what a beautiful day on the Sabbath when you're looking forward to the Messianic age and the era to come where there won't be death and there won't be disease and there won't be withered hands, right? There won't be any of these things. All things will be made right. What a beautiful picture. What a beautiful day. What a beautiful way to honor that. And so that's Jesus' argument. Well, they didn't like his argument. Okay. And unfortunately, they went away from there mad. And they're like, we're going to get this guy now, right? Oh, yeah. There, yeah, that little cool little picture. Okay, so then we've got one more up top there. Bing, there it is, okay? So now we're looking at, like, our other argument, right? Sabbath, okay, what's greater than the Sabbath? That sheep in the pit, okay? And then what's better, greater than the sheep in the pit? Human beings, okay? So again, we see at the top of the pyramid, right, what's greater than the Sabbath? Humans and having compassion and having mercy and chesed for people that are hurting and need help, okay? And these are the arguments that I see Jesus running through. And he's arguing this, he's arguing it right from their scripture, right? He's not just being like, I say, because really, are they going to accept that, right? But Jesus is awesome. He's like, okay, let's talk about it. Let's have a conversation, right? And we'll run through the scriptures and see if we can arrive at an understanding of why I'm doing what I'm doing, okay? So that's the end of the message part that I had here. And I wanted to just share a couple things I said at the end. So you could say, well, so what, you know? So what, David? Like, that's cool. You ran us through some obscure arguments and whatever. But I want to propose some things for you to think about. And so I guess the first would be this. If Jesus wasn't doing away with the Sabbath, as could be said, if this whole argument wasn't like, oh, I'm done with that thing, that's old, but he's actually upholding it, saying, yeah, the Sabbath is important. And yes, people are breaking it, but human life is very important, right? Chesed is greater than all the other things. Mercy, compassion, right? If it's actually a gift for mankind, that the Sabbath was made for man and not man for the Sabbath. And in fact, just to throw a verse out, if you want to write it down and look it up later, 1 Corinthians 11, 8, and 9. That's a very interesting verse to read in light of that. Okay? It says that Eve was made for Adam and not Adam for Eve. That Adam was created first and that Eve was created for him as a helpmate, as a friend. So who was created first in the days of creation, man or the Sabbath? Chad, man was created first, Sabbath comes second. The Sabbath was created for man, not man for the Sabbath, just as Eve was created for man and not man for Eve. Okay, there's a flow to this. Oh, thank you. There it is, right? All right? So if man is Lord of the Sabbath, well, that word Lord in Hebrew, Baal, you may have heard of like Baal-zebub, right? Baal means master, Lord. It's also the word for husband in Hebrew, right? So you could say, so the Son of Man is the husband of the Sabbath. That's a rabbit trail you can go down here, okay? But I want to leave it as this. If it's a good gift, the question is, do you have a Sabbath in your life? And I'm not saying you have to do sundown to sundown Saturday, but I'm saying, do you have a Sabbath rest in your life? It's a gift for mankind. It's not a burden. And I just want to throw it out there, something to think about. I don't feel like we get a lot of calls like this in the world, right? Time to turn off your phone. Say, I'm not available for a while here, okay? I'm going to hang out with my family. I'm going to get together with some people. I'm going to take a nap. I'm going to read the scriptures. I'm going to have a little worship time with friends. Do you have a Sabbath time in your life? May I suggest that you think about that and perhaps incorporate that into your life, okay? And we're just, you know what, let's figure out what works for us and what might be a good time. And it may not even be a full day, but what if you even started with just saying, you know what, could I do 12 hours? Could I do 8 hours? Put the phone down, be with God, be with the people that I love. Try to do it consistently. It can be refreshing. We've added it into our family life, and it's been really... Battery? Oh, there we go. Okay. All right. We're at the end here, though. All right? Secondly, many of the Pharisees were hypercritical of him, right? And they kind of got more and more aggressive, and unfortunately, as you read through the Gospels, it becomes more and more of like a beat him at all costs kind of thing, right? It seems to move from being a genuine question, what's the greatest commandment? Is it okay to heal on Sabbath? To like, all right, let's get this guy. Ask him the question, because we're going to nail him to the wall, right? It's happening in our current nation, okay? It's not about like, what's a good policy, or what's a good this, or what's the best thing of life? It's like, beat that person, beat that candidate, beat that party, because they're the devil, and we're going to save you, right? And it's like, is it a good policy? Who cares? We just have to win. It's all we have to do. If we've bitten that fruit, we need to repent. We need to back up and think about chesed, mercy and grace for everyone, whether they're your political party or not, whether you like them or not. Have we bitten into that fruit? And we're getting into that now. I'm going to just beat them at all costs. That is not, it's not the fruit of the Spirit. All right, and then lastly, look, also the world is seeing a rise in anti-Semitism, even in our own nation, right? How do we understand Jesus' mission to the world, and I would say even to the Jewish people, right? Do you know that Jesus still loves the Jewish people, that he still has a plan and a purpose for them, right? Have we bitten into that fruit where we say, God's done with them, he rejected them, they're done, they crucified the Lord, it's over for them, right? Or do we say, well, let's back it up, let's back it up. Maybe we should cautiously think about this. If Jesus isn't coming in as like the radical revolutionary overturning everything, but he's actually loving his people and trying to love them into truth, okay? Are we biting into anti-Semitism? Are we biting into that fruit that would say, yes, we're part of the triumphant church, they're part of the rejected branch, we're good, you're bad, we're in, you're out. It's not good, right? Jesus is coming back for his Jewish people and his Gentile people as one.
I'm going to leave there.
things.
Hello? All right. All right, now we got a half an hour left. No, look. No, really, though, but just to reiterate, look, I'm putting forth Sabbath. Do you have a time of rest to be with God and family? I'm putting forward chesed and love versus bitter hatred and beat them at all costs. And I'm putting forward a love for God's people, for Israel, to pray for them, to love them, to support them. Doesn't mean you have to agree with everything they do. That doesn't have to be an all or nothing, right? But like, it's a big deal to God, right? God didn't do away with him. Hosea 6:6, Hosea married a prostitute who was unfaithful to him 3 times. And God said, marry her back again because I'm showing you what I'm like with Israel. I'm not giving up on you. I'm gonna marry you and betroth you in love forever, right? And you better hope that he doesn't divorce people, because you know what? If Israel can't stand with a covenant, what luck do we have? What luck do we have? All right, really, seriously, right? If God could just be like, you know what? The Jews, we had a good run. They kind of suck. And now I'm with you guys. Well, what happens when we don't have a good run and now we suck? I'm on to the next. Now I'm with Islam. All right, I'm gonna hand it over to Daryl to clean up the mess.